Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Mercury Midday News here at Radio UTD. We are broadcasting live from the Student Union at the University of Texas at Dallas, located in Richardson, Texas. It is a cold day outside today, Comets, and we appreciate you for tuning in, and I hope you are somewhere warm. I really do. Over there laughing is, do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm Nitty Gottke. I'm the co-host for Mercury Midday News.
Have I introduced myself yet? I don't think so. Well, if I didn't, I'm Kara Santucci, and we're glad to be here. You're in for an exciting news show today. At first, we're going to play a bit of a Q&A we did from a piece that showed up in our last newspaper with Dr. Alex Picaro, who's done a lot of research on the NFL. But he's also talking a lot about how media has impacted the way that he views his research and approaches his everyday work. And so that was a really interesting interview, so we're going to play a segment of that. We're going to hook you up with some new music courtesy of music director Kevin Barahona here and there within. Don't worry if you can't listen to the show right now. We will be recording it and putting it up on our website at utdmercury.com. So you can listen to it over and over again to your heart's content. But first, we have the news. So today, the high is 54 with a low of 36, and it's sunny. Friday, much the same, 56 to 36. Saturday, 56 to 38, and Sunday, 59 to 37. Those are highs and lows, everybody. It's going to be a chilly weekend. The Dow is up 35.6 points, which is at actually a record high for, I think, maybe of all time. For a long time, it's up really, really high. And then NASDAQ is down 1.27 points. A couple campus events coming up for the week. We have the Lone Star Fiesta, which is a Tex-Mex country dancing jamboree from 5 to 7 p.m. in the Student Union 2.602 on January 26th. That is today.
That is today.
So get ready for that. We have Suicide Prevention Week, which is starting, I believe, next Monday. Not entirely sure. Check the comic calendar for that one. But it'll be at the Spirit Racks from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. to kick that off with them. And then Cinematheque is showing Oscar-nominated movie Moonlight on February 1st, Johnson 2.604 at 7 p.m. That is, yeah, February 1st. Oh, I'm sorry. Suicide Prevention, that begins on January 30th. Moonlight, February 1st. So check those out if you are interested.
Yeah, and if you are planning on going to see Moonlight, on our website, you can check out a movie review that was written by one of our writers last semester. So
yeah, that is on our website. Go to utdmercury.com, type in
Moonlight, you should find it.
That's by
Vibu.
Former writer Vibu.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to take a really quick music break. And then after that, we will be bringing you guys more of the news that you crave. So this is Future Politics by artist Astra from the title album Future Politics.
Maybe I'm alone, but I know I'm never coming back here. There's only one way, future politics. I'm never coming back here. There's only one way, future politics. Future politics. I look ahead and I think about it. Steal a horse somebody needs to heal.
Hi, I'm Bharat Armili, and I'm the web editor for the UTD Mercury, and you're listening to Mercury Midday News on Radio UTD.
Dr. Alex Vaquero, the Ashbel Smith Professor of Criminology and Associate Dean of Graduate Programs for the School of Economic, Political, and Policy Sciences at UTD, has had his work published and referenced in some of the largest publications in the world. Listen to an interview the Mercury did with Vaquero, where we discussed academia, research, and how the media impacts his perspective on both.
Recently, Vaquero has conducted three studies that we talked about in our interview. The first showed NFL players actually had lower arrest rates than the general population. The second demonstrated NFL instances of violent arrest were also lower when compared to the general population. The final, however, found a link between penalties on the field and rates of arrest among NFL players. You'll hear Alex Vaquero reference these studies throughout the interview. Let's talk a little bit about media response to your research.
Yeah, it's very interesting. So the first study, when UT Dallas did the press release, Kim Horner works very closely with me on a lot of my research studies that get publicized. She sent out the press release, and a Reuters reporter picked it up. And once Reuters grabs it and puts it on, hundreds and hundreds of outlets got it. So right. CNN got it, ESPN got it, CBS got it. I mean, everybody. Huffington Post did a whole series opinion piece on that study. So it got so much media attention. And so that was very, and so that's what led to the NFL to have a unique interest in it. So I had a call with the special counsel for player conduct, Lisa Friel, who's appointed by the commissioner to oversee basically all these kinds of issues that the NFL was having. So I had a conference call at the NFL offices. And so what that's been about, the in a series of the Wall Street Journal, this, I was telling you that the guy's doing a whole piece on this, it's been interesting because everybody's like, oh, I always thought it was this. And so right. They're intrigued by the novelty of the research, not just debunking this myth, but also the fact that we were able to access these data and to ask these kinds of research questions. So, you know, and it's an interesting thing. So it blends science and pop culture. I think mm-hmm. of sports as a pop culture.
Right.
So it blends these two things, and I think that's what's generated a lot of interest in the media. Now, as you know, the media cycle is whatever the hottest topic is right now. And, you know, you could release a press release today and it goes nowhere because the whole world could be in, you know, tizzy over something.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been interesting dealing with reporters, both media. I mean, I did KERA here, the NPR station. She did a whole thing on this about 2 weeks ago that's online about the NFL studies. So when it's neat doing the radio, it's neat doing call-in shows. I've done ESPN and CBS live call-in shows. And you do print media, then you do magazine media. And so from a scientist, you know, you're never taught how to deal with the media. No way to do it. You know, you go to graduate school, you never learn this stuff. So it's kind of learning as you go. So it's what's really helped me do this is I'm able to explain what we did to people who don't have knowledge about these data sources and the statistical analyses. So I think it's helped me become a better communicator of the studies and a better researcher and a writer. Because we've done several op-ed pieces on our research back. We just did one in Dallas Morning News about a week ago on this exact topic. So
that
it's helped.
You put out your
yeah, yeah, out? Yeah. Nicole, who's my wife, is also a professor here. Her and I wrote a DMM piece on the NFL penalties arrest study. Okay. It came out, I think it was over Christmas break sometime.
Was that your most recent study that's coming out next year? Or
this is the one that's coming out, yeah. So this is
2017.
Yeah, so the study actually gets printed in a journal in 2017, even though it goes online first, like in 2016.
Oh, okay.
So once it gets online, because everything now is online, then it becomes live fodder for the whole world.
Sure.
So it's been interesting to communicate to different audiences the same message, and so it forces you as a scholar to kind of think carefully about that. So it's pushed me to be better, and I think I'm getting better. And it's kind of interesting in a way to reach a different audience, because when you write journal articles and our research, it's great, it's in the library, we get accolades, and that, but you don't reach a different kind of audience. And so it's neat to get reach this different kind of audience. Then you get emails and feedback. So I had one staff member, UT Dallas, said, one of the first studies, she goes, oh, it was really great because we talked about your study during dinner last night with my kids. And so you go, well, that's kind of cool. Is that? And again, you don't want to change people's minds, but when you get them to think about science, whether it's NFL and crime or whatever it is, you know, insert your favorite topic, that's kind of cool. So that's what's been really interesting about the media response for me.
So you view this spotlight sort of as like a positive thing for the research, right?
It's a positive thing for the research and certainly for the university.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when my research on another study on juvenile fines made the front page of the New York Times a few months ago.
Was that the one in the New Yorker as well?
Yeah. So the New Yorker did something. It was on the front cover of the New York Times. The President Obama cited it in a proclamation he made. So that's really – I mean, you go, wow, that's really neat. But again, you never know when something's going to hit or not, you know?
Right.
We sent the press release on the juvenile fines that was in the New Yorker and New York Times, and one person contacted us, you know, and it was a New York Times guy. But you know, that's like the holy grail, right? The New York Times, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal. Everybody else will pick it up. So everybody else did. So we're really excited about the fact that the penalty stuff that he might run it on, I think it's going to run Saturday. And that's really great.
For Wall Street Journal?
Yeah.
Is this new for you in your career? Like, have you had other
the last 3 years?
Blown up.
The last 3 years. You know, early print, Mike, it's a really good question. It's a really great question. Early point in my career, you know, you're a scientist and you're focused on doing the research, writing journal articles, and you just don't know how to do this, you know, and you don't know how to communicate. Because it's, you know, when you're on TV or you're in print and you're on live radio, you say the slightly the wrong thing and you can totally screw up. So it's really been my research. I felt more comfortable in my research, and my research is the stuff I've been doing lately has just been able to get a lot more attention just because of the topics.
Has it made you think differently when you're doing the research and you're doing the writing?
Absolutely. It's made me think not necessarily different about the research, but differently about how I write, because I want my message to be able to reach my academic peers. I want it to be able to reach my parents who never went to college, and my, you know, I want it to be people have dinner conversations about this stuff. But anything that can get people engaged in talking about the science, I think it's fun. I mean, I think science should be fun. I think people should enjoy it, and I think should learn from it. So it's been neat. I never thought, you never know when these things take off or don't take off, like I said. But when they do, they're kind of neat.
When it does take off, does that mean you usually are able to get more funding for future research?
Not necessarily funding, but it opens up a different set of audiences. So I did a study last year that looked at food insecurity, food deserts. And the North Texas Food Bank is inviting me to give a talk to their leader development board. So these are people who work in the real world, right, trying to get food into kids' lives. Read my op-ed piece last summer and said, would you come talk to our board? That's really cool. I get to talk to a different audience who may not know about UT Dallas or our research, and that just gets us, you know, in front of a different audience.
Do you think other professors who do their own research and write their own pieces, if they don't have the experience of it blowing up, or if they aren't forced to think about, you know, I don't want to say like the lowest common denominator, but, you know, like regular people that might be interested in the data, I don't know, I'm trying to think.
No, I understand exactly what you're saying. Is
that something for important
it's,
for professors
it's,
to
it's,
learn?
It's useful.
Okay.
Because you never know when it'll happen. So you never know when someone might come across a study or a newspaper might see a press release or something, and then they're interested. And, you know, it's not that academics should have to do that. You know, no one should be forced to do anything they don't feel comfortable with. A lot of my academic colleagues don't want to be in the media. Right. They're really concerned about it. And that's fine. That's totally okay. You know, I turn down some media requests for things, and I get calls for a quote. Hey, can you give me a quote on this particular issue? And if I don't know it or I'm not comfortable, I say, that's not for me. But here's four other people who you might want to talk to.
Right.
So it's not necessarily that they should be, you know, certainly not forced to do it. Should they understand the process? Yeah, I think that would be helpful for them to understand the process. So I think that some universities, you know, will do these training sessions where the media office will come and say, hey, you know, if you all want help in getting your work out there, here's a way to communicate to the media. I'm still learning how to communicate to the media. I think it's good for them to have the ability to do that. But it shouldn't be required because it's not for everybody.
Right. Did you have the opportunity in your, not undergrad, PhD process to have someone come and say this is
zero.
How you do it? So
absolutely
like trial
not.
By fire.
I had no clue what I was doing I'd done some quotes, you know, a CNN story or Dallas Morning News, hey, give us some quotes on the crime rate in Dallas, right? I've done that for a lot of years in my career. That's easy to do when you're like, oh, okay, the crime rate's here and here and across these different cities. That's easy. But when someone's focusing on your work, all the stuff that you sit down and do it over and over again for, you know, months of your time doing these things, that's different. And it's a little bit nerve-wracking, to be quite honest with you, because you don't want to come across as, you know, first of all, you're talking about the science and the article and the quality of that, but you're also representing the institution. You know, when I see my quote or my research says University of Texas at Dallas, I want to make sure it makes our university look good.
Right.
Because if it doesn't, that's not a good thing. So you think very carefully about how you communicate the message and how you have to remain as objective as possible and not walk into that, well, my opinion is that.
Mm-hmm.
That's a fine line. And again, there's no training for that. So you just got to hope that the faculty who are, you know, learning this trade as academics, that's their focus. And if they want to go down this road, that they should have some mentoring, whether it's from seasoned people who do this, but especially from the Office of Communications who knows how to do this. Great question.
When things started, like, blowing up for you, what was that? Like, when you first started this project, it was 2013?
Yeah, 2014 is when we started doing the original study. The first one hit in August of 2015, right before the NFL season started.
Right.
So the day Reuters hit, he called me and said, I'm doing a piece for Reuters. And I'm like, uh-oh. I mean, Reuters is like the AP, right? Everybody mm-hmm. in the world gets it. And he asked me some great questions, and then a day later he published it, and then instantaneously,
requests,
phone, email, media office, and you handle them all. It just comes with the territory. So if you know this is adage says, if you live by the sword, you die by the sword.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to enter this domain, you be ready for the domain. Not that it'll always happen, but I think it's, you know, anytime you can get that good research out there. And it makes the university proud of that kind of stuff. It's important because universities need to attract different constituents. And they, you know, UT Dallas is not an old university, so it's still trying to get its message out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the more people that hear about it, the better.
So this, like, NFL study can help add to, like, putting UT Dallas on the map?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, because the universities, you know, you can actually find this out from Kim Horner. It's really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
They can actually tabulate like number of web page hits and like free, they have actually this thing called a free advertising score. Do you know about this? It's really fascinating. I don't know where these numbers come from, so I don't know if they're true or not. But actually they can calculate the number of dollars generated by having media hits and sources in the newspapers and stuff. I had no idea that existed. No idea. But apparently this stuff is tabulated.
Wow.
Universities have to write reports to the Board of Regents, say, you know, our faculty have been, you know, commented on in Washington Post or CNN, and we have a lot of faculty in this university who are really good about that.
Mm-hmm.
So every day, the University of Texas system sends out to its presidents, you know, faculty members in the news. So that's you rather them in the news than not in the news. So because you get to then, the university gets to be seen as having experts. So, you know, Seema Yasmin, who's in public health here,
she's everywhere.
She's everywhere. Yeah. So I know Seema really well, and so I've talked to her about this kind of stuff often. So she does the columns for the DMN, and you know, she was on the top of the Ebola. When the Ebola scare happened, she was the face. And having a great scholar with the University of Texas Dallas name commenting on a pivotal issue that affected this region, that was a really good thing. And so I think that helps the university bolster its image that we have go-to people. So if you want to have a quote on crime rates, Dallas Police Department, I always get a call from the DMN. That's the guy I want to talk to. A health scare, we got that person. A nanotechnology person, we got that person.
Sure.
That makes the university say we have these kinds of go-to people. And not just us, four of us. There's lots of people in this university.
Right.
So it's really good for the institution to have that kind of thing in its back pocket.
I was going to ask, you said something when you're like, you live by the sword, you die by the sword. If you're going to get into it, be ready. Were you ready?
I was. I was because I had, at the time, 20 years of being a really good academic. And talking to conferences all over the place, and I've testified to Congress, and I've testified to lots of government agencies around the world. So I had that kind of experience. You know, you testify to congressional bodies, you're talking to people who don't know anything about the topic and the science. So you have to communicate in a way that they understand. So I had that experience already.
Are these like for task force?
Yeah, several task force,
okay.
Yeah. So testify in the U.S. Senate, different task force for the Attorney General. So that gives you a different kind of experience. But talking to the audiences, that's kind of like a media audience. You know, they think very in short bites,
mm-hmm.
And then you have to put it in a way that they understand. So that helped me. But again, I needed to know that I was a really good scholar before I was willing to do that. And so because when you have, you know, it's having credentials, saying, I know what I'm talking about. You know, I couldn't have done this 1 year out of graduate school because I didn't know anything. I mean, who knows anything, right? I know a little bit more now, and 10 years from now, I'll be better than now.
Mm-hmm.
But I could not have done this early in my career. And so also, you know, I was in charge of the Campus Carry Working Group here.
Right.
So I dealt with the Mercury a ton in that regard, and also lots of other media with that. So that helps as well when you deal with, because that was a very touchy issue, as you know. And so I had different constituents. I had faculty, I had students, I had staff, I had the media, I had the community. And you're trying to negotiate a space where you're trying to please as many people as possible, recognize you're not going to please them all. So at the end of the day, you always have to do the right thing. And that gave me a year of working on a hot topic that people felt very strongly about, that I had to sit back and just kind of be the voice of reason, in a sense of, we have this law we have to implement, and we're going to do it as best as we possibly can. So again, that was one more whole year of experience that helped me deal with this stuff as well.
Was it nerve-wracking at first, though, when the Wolves, I mean,
yeah,
NFL calls?
Yeah, it's when the NFL, when the secretary of the NFL commissioner calls you, and that's, you're like, did I just tick someone off?
Right. Were they angry?
No, not at all. In fact, we had an hour-long conference call with three of their vice presidents about, you know, our study, what we did. And, you know, the NFL is a big-time corporation, and any publicity for them is on their radar screen. So I still in touch with them, you know, let them know what our research is. You know, they communicate back to me, and never saying anything, you know, not negative or positive, but say, thank you very much for doing this research, you know, keep us posted on your work. You know, so it's, it is a little bit odd when that happens. I mean, it's weird when, you know, the New York Times and Wall Street Journal and CNN call you. It's weird. I mean, it's a really weird experience. But it means that the quality of the work that's being done is good. And so I think that that's a good thing.
And it's like information that people are wanting, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, we've done stuff on immigration and crime that really took off. So we've done some work in that. Ann Coulter actually wrote a whole op-ed slambasting me. Awesome. It's kind of fun. I'm like, ah, really?
For your research?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's classic. Oh, yeah.
But if it's like your research,
oh, yeah,
how could you be
She
held?
Just didn't like the results.
Oh, okay.
It was about, our research showed that immigrants don't cause more crime than actual regular Americans do.
Mm-hmm.
And she just went after us. Oh, it's classic.
What was that like? I mean, did you take that with humor? Or?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I just like, okay, well, the fact that she took the time to write meant that it affected her.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't respond back or anything.
Sure.
But I'm like, that's interesting. Well, I never thought my work would reach someone like that. So that's kind of interesting. You know, you never know how far your work will go, you know, and in an academic world, we're living in our academic journals and our research and our conferences, and that's our lives. But when you get to a different reach of an audience, it's interesting, because you just never know how that will go and what people's reactions would be.
Does that ever make you think a little more about like the implications of your research?
Absolutely. I think very carefully about what the study findings will mean, but more importantly about how people will interpret the findings.
Mm.
And that's the key, is because, you know, you can go to an art museum and you can look at a Salvador Dali painting and go, that's crazy. I don't understand what that means. Now, someone else could say that's the most beautiful thing in the world. Right? So you have to think very carefully about how you present the information to people and then how they walk away with that information. Because as a scientist, you want to say, look, this is the objective information. It's up to you as the consumer of that information to walk away with whatever it is you want to walk away with. So we want to be very, very careful about how we ask our research questions and how we provide that information to people in a way that they understand.
Is that something you were like, kind of cognizant about this like most recent line of research? Because like, you know, I think I just said it. I was like, so should people not hire NFL
Absolutely.
Players?
Absolutely. I mean, the finding was like, wow. So, and that's what every reporter asks, exactly the question you asked. Does that mean we shouldn't hire someone? Like, well, no, but it does mean you might want to take an extra look at it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think you can, because, you know, a lot of people do dumb things when they're 15 and 16 years old.
Mm-hmm.
That's reality. The majority of people never go on to become hardened criminals just because they did something stupid when they were younger. Doesn't mean you don't want to dismiss it, but it's there. And so you got to look at it. Got to see why it's there. And that's where the organization needs to unpack that data from that person.
Is that something you think... I mean, I would guess that like most people doing research would think about the implications of their research, but if they're not really thinking about it getting out...
You never think about that. You're never taught to think about that. You're always taught to be just the pure scientist in graduate school. and writing your research and publishing journal articles and writing books and getting grants. That's the world of an academic.
Mm-hmm.
You're never taught this other stuff. You kind of learn it as you go, or you have a mentor who helps you along.
So we were kind of talking earlier about, you know, is it important for professors to be able to, like, talk to the lay people? Is it also important for professors to, you know, think critically about the implications of their research?
I think very much that last part. I mean, I think that there's the craft of an academic and a researcher is a serious enterprise. I mean, you are contributing scientific knowledge to the body of scientific knowledge that exists in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I think you have to take that part seriously. You know, it's you know, less than 2% of the population has a PhD, and even less are academics. And we are entrusted with producing science of the highest quality and instructing in teaching students to the best of our ability. And I think that that's a serious thing. I mean, I have fun in the classroom. I love what I do for a living. But I take it very seriously. I mean, students are paying a lot of money to come to school. The taxpayers are paying my salary. They deserve to have the highest quality of everything I can possibly offer to them.
Right.
Having our message, being able to communicate to lay people, I think it's good for faculty to be able to talk to people.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's important. I think that's very important. To the media, maybe less so. But to lay people, I think we have to be able to communicate the majority of people aren't going to understand all the big scientific equations and mathematical formula. They're not going to get that.
Or that there is a difference between correlation and
causation. Right. And so that's what really important thing to stress is, like, you know, we do not say one causes the other. They're related. And here's what this means. And I think that's where it's really important for researchers to communicate to an audience. And I always tell my students when I talk to them about my work in the policy world, I say, look, you're having a Thanksgiving conversation with all of your aunts and uncles, and none of them know anything about science. How do you explain to them what you just did in 3 minutes? Use the old egg timer, right? The old white egg timer, 3 minute thing. That's how I learned when I started testifying to different government agencies around the world, to government criminal justice programs, is I needed to explain all of the math and all of the science
mm-hmm.
in a way that they would get.
Right, because quickly. I mean, no one really knows whether or not their research is going to blow up. So, like, if you can explain it that way.
That's right. You ever heard about the elevator speech?
Yeah.
The elevator speech is the exact same thing. You want to be able to communicate to someone why they should hire you in 3 minutes, because they have 10,000 other things on their plate. And you are this, and I realize that. So, you know, when I communicate to lay audiences, I need to explain to them, hey, this is why it matters. This is what we found, and this is what it means. Those three things.
Well, and in this age, like, attention spans are
very small.
Well.
You know, very
is
small.
That something that other academics are thinking about? Do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. So I have several colleagues here in EPS who actually do a lot with the media.
Mm-hmm.
Harold Clark, for example, a political scientist, does a lot on polling, and so he's constantly in the news on those matters. So they all think about these kinds of issues because they're all dealing with the media in different capacity, and you have to be able to have this. You also, you know, when you do TV, it's different from doing print. And so when I did CBS 11 last week, you have to have this way that people see you on TV and they go, okay, I get it. You know, I'm interested. You know, the person has a good voice, or,
right.
You know, the person is showing his expressions on video. So I think that stuff's not taught. I mean, it's just the person. And some people are really shy and introverted, and that's not for them. And that's okay. It's
right.
Not for everybody. It's just not for everybody. But I think the university does want the kind of people to communicate this kind of message out to the lay audiences, because our constituency is the state of Texas, the citizens of the state of Texas.
Well, and I guess to some extent, the whole country.
Absolutely. Yeah, because when it gets picked up, it's all over the place. I mean, people in France read The New Yorker. You know, people in Singapore read the CNN.
Well, everyone reads The New York Times.
Everybody reads The New York Times. And so everybody reads The New York Times. So that's when that happened, that was kind of neat. You know, when you get front page, that's a big deal. So that was pretty cool.
Did it feel like validating that?
It felt really good, because the next day, the Attorney General of the United States issued a proclamation based on our exact research findings. And so that was the first time when a big shot in D.C. actually affected policy. And when the president decides to make October the Juvenile Justice Awareness Month and cites our work.
Is that what happened?
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. Oh, yeah, it's online. Yeah, and so when that happens, you're like, wow. I, you know, wow.
When was that?
October?
I can send you all
that stuff.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's you don't set out to do this. You just don't. You know, as an academic, you're setting out to do good research. Never that would happen. You know, and it's not one of these things. It's mm-hmm. like, wow, you know, hopefully my work can be used for the betterment of kids' lives in that particular study. And so when you think about that, then you go, okay, so that's neat. Maybe some good will come out of it. And that's all you can hope for. Because as a scientist, as like a doctor, you know, your first principle is do no harm. You want to take your work and do good with it. And so when that happens, it's great. It really is great. Okay. This has turned into a whole really broad discussion
about
really cool things. Good
I know,
questions.
But I think that's what I'm going to make it more about, because that's, I think, really compelling. I mean, I was asking about it.
No, it turned into a really, really – now you're making me reflect back over, you know, all of this stuff and how I've handled it and things I've done. It's been – I've learned a lot. I mean, I've learned about how to communicate better mm-hmm. to people. And it's forced me in my own work to think that way.
Think about, like, who you're reaching.
Yeah, who I'm reaching. I want to reach everybody. I don't want to just reach 10 people who are going to read a journal article. I want to reach my students. I want to reach my family. I want to reach a community member who writes me an email who said, I read your opinion piece today, and I'm at one person. I said, I'm going to go donate money to the food bank today. And I'm like, mm-hmm. wow. I mean, that's so cool. I mean, right. You just never think about that. It's not that that's going to change the world, but, you know, like, something you did actually had an effect on someone. You know, and that's what the great thing about teaching is. You know, when I've had students who say, you know what, I changed my major because of your class, or it was the best class I've ever had was with you, that you can't put a price on that kind of stuff. It's so – it's a different kind of reward than what you get in your research world. And it just makes you wake up every day and go, you know what, this is, I'm blessed to be able to do what I get to do for a living. I'm totally, totally blessed.
All right. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Mercury Morning News. This is still Kara Santucci and Nitty Gottke. You're listening to Radio UTD, the student-run radio station for the University of Texas at Dallas, streaming live from the Student Union located in sunny Richardson, Texas. A quick reminder, the views expressed on Radio UTD are solely those of the DJs and the guests and do not reflect the views of Radio UTD as a whole or the campus. Don't sue us. The joke will be on you because we have no money. So, segueing into the next section, this would be a good time to remind you guys, if you have any questions and you want to call in, the number is 972-883-6305. And let's get started. We are sitting here in studio with two members of student government. Guys, do you want to introduce yourselves?
I'm Adam Richards.
And I'm Sungar Ideas.
And y'all are both on the Legislative Affairs Committee?
Yes.
And senators. All right. So they're here today to talk about the bathroom bill. So just to start, one of you guys, can you tell us a little bit about what the bathroom bill is?
So what the bathroom bill is basically it's a bill in the Texas legislature proposed by the lieutenant governor that would restrict restroom usage to the sex listed on your birth certificate as opposed to self-identified gender identity.
Okay, and where is that in the stage of being passed and heard in the legislature?
From what I understand, it is still in committees.
Okay.
I'm not even sure if it's made it into committee yet, but it's in the very early stages.
Right, but if it were to pass, I believe it says like the rollout would be around September.
Yes.
2017.
Yes.
So what has SG's sort of involvement with the bathroom bill been? So let's talk a little bit about the meeting you had on Tuesday to discuss this.
So what we did was we had a public session where we had our visitors come in, express their views, and we had a public vote on exactly what we would be doing towards this bill. What we ultimately decided was that we as student government are not against, or we're against this bill, and we would like to represent all the views of UTD.
And that was decided by vote, right?
Yes.
It was pretty majority, right? 28-7, somewhere around there.
Yes, correct.
So tell me a little bit about the views that people brought up. Was there anyone there that was against it?
There was no one who, do you mean against the bill or against the...
Sorry, against the resolution.
Against the resolution, okay. Against the resolution, there was no one who publicly spoke out against it, and I actually knew most of the audience members. I think the vast majority of the audience members were in favor of the resolution, mm-hmm. so...
To clarify, the resolution was student government's resolution to create a message announcing that we're against this bill, not for the bill itself.
Right, right. Yeah, that's a good clarification.
Yeah, please keep clarifying that.
So y'all were just going to, the point was to send that opinion to the Texas legislature, right?
Correct.
To put on record UTD is against this.
Yes.
Okay, did you have a question?
Yeah, and what was the visitor turnout like in terms of, you know, your regular SG meetings and then the special session? Well, it wasn't a special session. It was scheduled at your normal time.
Correct. It was a regular session. However, right. We had a fantastic turnout. Normally, we have maybe 10 people there, but this time we had about 50. So.
Yeah, it was, I think Akshita, it was either Akshita or Joey said it might have been actually the largest turnout at a student government meeting ever.
So were the people there mostly like advocates, so like Pride, Rainbow Guard?
Yes.
Yeah, it was mostly okay. Pride and Rainbow Guard people.
Okay. I was going to ask because I know that we actually had a comment on the story that one of our writers did covering the meeting, where they were speaking against the resolution. Their argument was, whether this is factually accurate or not, I'm just curious to see, like, your response to people who are against doing the resolution. This person commented on the post saying, there have been several cases documented where individuals posing as transgender have violated the privacy and physically harmed others in bathrooms. Some of these instances have occurred on the campuses of state colleges and universities like UTD. As far as I know, the physical evidence of those incidences are like, they're not really there, right?
No, and that would be news to me. That would also be news to the 200 sexual assault advocacy organizations that have come out, either against this particular bill or against the one in North Carolina. I can't particularly remember. And it's also just kind of, I think a lot about this bill is a misunderstanding of how sexual assault occurs. Vast majority of sexual assaults are not like random public instances. The vast majority of them occur between people who, to some extent, know each other. So already on top of like that kind of assault type that's supposedly going to happen if this happens. And by the way, trans people are already using the restrooms of the gender they identify with. You can't enforce this bill. You can't see if someone's trans. So,
right.
Like, I don't know what you, unless you're going to have, like, you know, like a genital inspector at
right.
every door. You can't enforce this. But just going back to what I was saying before, that kind of assault is already rare. I have not personally been heard of any instances of this happening. And also, if that were to happen, sexual assault is still illegal, regardless of whether it's committed by a trans person or a cis person. So,
right, so it's kind of already covered by a law.
Right, it's redundant and just unnecessarily discriminatory.
Exactly. It's possible that such instances exist. However, I haven't heard of any of them. And
right.
If they do exist, it's nominal.
So will SG be publishing this opinion for other people to know the reasoning behind it? Because it seems like there's some misinformation out there based on like what this comment has said.
So to go forward, we need to poll the public to make sure that we are in line with student views. Otherwise, we can't put out this resolution.
Okay.
So until then, we will not be releasing anything.
So what kind of numbers are you looking for before you can go forward?
A simple majority would be enough to pass the resolution. However, we actually did surveying on this 2 years ago when similar bills were being proposed. And we had questions explicitly related to bathroom usage, and over 90% of respondents were in favor of a similar style resolution that we are proposing right now. So I think we're going to have the numbers in our favor. I'm not particularly concerned about that right now. So
I can't give you a actual number of students that we
right.
have to poll. However, it will be a significant amount so that we actually have
representative group.
The
exactly.
last one had about 500 something respondents, which is actually a statistically significant sample too. So.
Sure. Yeah. Did you?
Yeah. So, what sort of impact do you expect, if any, this resolution to have once it's sent to the Texas legislature?
Well, UTD alone will not be able to do a whole lot. However, if we are joined by other schools, which I think is likely to occur, this will send a broader message that we at public education are generally against this.
Yeah, and additionally, like, you know, this isn't just us. Like, if you're thinking about, like, if you have opinions on this bill, you should be calling your congressman, calling the lieutenant governor's office, calling the governor's office. I've already called the lieutenant governor's office. It took me 5 seconds to leave my opinion on SB6, and they do write that stuff down. They do
right.
watch that, and if you have watched the political maneuvers of the lieutenant governor, he has been he is clearly worried about whether or not this he can get this bill, particularly through the House, where Speaker Strauss has kind of demurred on it. Mm-hmm. So your voice does matter. It does have an effect. And, you know, talk to your congressman. Right. Talk to your state senator.
Yeah, and I know there are ways to do it by email, too, on their website. I think it's, like, generally thought to be less effective.
Phone calls better.
Yeah. But there are other ways. Let's talk a little bit about the way that – so we recently put in single-stall restrooms at UTD, gender-neutral specific restrooms. So we were talking about, before we went on air, a little bit of the confusion around how this bill would impact those single-stall restrooms.
I had this, like, we have a chat for the legislative committee, and I was talking to the committee chair because I used to run an LGBT advocacy organization. I used to be president of Rainbow Guard, so I usually keep abreast of these kind of, like, issues. Right. I feel like if I'm like, I would have heard about an amendment to SB6, like, what's going on here? And what Christian told me was, our committee chair, he told me that if you look at, I think it's Section B of the bill, if I remember correctly. I don't have it in front of me, so.
Is it a political subdivision may not adopt or enforce an order, ordinance, or any other measure that relates to the designation or use of a private entity's bathroom or changing facility?
I think it's that one. Let me see. I have it in front of me. Yes, I believe it's B.
Right.
So what Christian was saying, and I was reading over it like several times because I was reading through this bill like while I was eating dinner last night. I'm like, Christian, I don't see what's going on here. And he's like, it's subsection B. And it's like,
right.
Then I looked at it and he's like, he's like, the campus lawyer was the one who said that this would effectively get rid of our gender neutral restroom policy because of the way it's written, it doesn't explicitly disallow them. Mm-hmm. But what it does is it makes it basically impossible to enforce having them in buildings or like making sure that single stall restrooms are gender neutral. I'm not entirely sure
right.
how that impacts the ones that currently exist, but I can't imagine it's something that's going to be particularly helpful.
Right, because I'll read the part where like the contradiction kind of seems to come from. It's section 769.052. This subchapter does not prohibit a school district or open enrollment charter school from providing an accommodation, including a single occupancy bathroom or changing facility. So maybe the problem is
I think it's the
terminology.
It's a single. If you look at the definition of single use restroom, like I think what that would be is I don't know the terminology in the bill. I don't remember offhand. And Songar, you can chime in here. But basically, it doesn't. I think it talks about unisex facilities, but I'm not sure. But I know that doesn't guarantee that it would be a gender neutral facility. It just says it would guarantee a single stall facility of some sort. You
mm-hmm.
could have an instance where a trans woman is being barred from the group facilities and then is forced to use a men's single stall restroom. Like that would be perfectly
acceptable
under the context
of that
bill, which is horrible. But
right. Something that's kind of interesting. Before I get more into like the rhetoric of the bill, the 7 who were against the resolution, did they have arguments
for
their decision?
Because we had a vote by secret ballot, those 7 are protected by, you know. So,
okay. Interesting. Did senators, was the process of the meeting just hearing arguments, or did senators also present arguments themselves?
So senators did make arguments. All of them were in favor of creating the resolution.
Okay.
We didn't hear anything against.
Okay. Let's get back into the bill. Something that's kind of interesting to me is a section, and if you're listening, I posted a link on our Twitter, which is Merck Midday News, where you can follow along with the bill. But something that's kind of interesting is Section 12.501 states that punishment for an individual who commits an assault, for example, is higher if the assault occurred in a bathroom versus a parking lot. So that's kind of an interesting consequence of the bill. I'm just bringing it up because I think it's kind of interesting. But what kind of remains to be seen is, you know, if this passes, you know, what that would mean for day-to-day operations. Like someone we were talking to, our news editor was kind of like, does that mean if kids are fighting in a bathroom versus fighting in a parking lot, the penalty will be more severe?
Yeah, I don't know. It's again, this is not like, and again, I'm just speaking for myself here.
Right.
Like this is not something that I personally view to be a well-written bill. I personally think a useless bill. I think the more disturbing thing in there was the penalties that would be faced by the school for like violations of this law. I think it's like $1,000 for the first offense, $10,000 for every subsequent offense, and then every day afterward is another $10,000 fine.
Well, and it also gives powers of the state the power to sue the institution that isn't for even more
right.
money.
Right, and this will open up UT Dallas to a lot of legal issues. This will be pitting administration directly against the students because administration is going to have to directly the administration would have to basically either choose to side with the students and accept whatever legal consequences come from that, or they're going to have to work with the state to implement this. Which
if this bill is passed, we will have to abide by it, otherwise face the dire consequences.
Yeah. Just a clarification that in terms of implementation, student government would not be having a role in that. That would be purely administrative decision. Our hands are kind of tied with regards to that. We can have opinions on whether or not we think administration should do that, but outside of that, that would be students directly lobbying administration.
Exactly. We've kind of done to the extent of what we can by putting out a public or soon to be public announcement on our position on the bill. However, we can't actually do anything to stop the implementation of the bill, see whether it's passed or not. So.
And just one more thing, just in terms of actually getting stuff done, because it sounds like we're passing the buck a little bit. The gender neutral restrooms on campus were actually partially a student government initiative.
Right.
Like having that be instituted and be campus policy was a student government initiative. So we do have some say in some kind of things. I'm not saying we're completely absolved of all policy.
But when you're taking state money and it's a state
bill. When it's a legal issue, that's the campus lawyer's job. That's the administration's job. We're not. Our job is not to implement the rules. We just suggest.
Right.
We can suggest things and we can help craft things and find what student opinion is on things.
Did you have a comment?
Yeah. So, Songar, you mentioned earlier, I want to backtrack a little bit, that this resolution can play a role in a larger movement across the state from other public universities as well, correct?
Correct.
So has UT Dallas's SG been in contact with other universities, student governments, and their leaders?
We have not been formally in contact with other universities. However, I wouldn't be surprised if that occurs.
So that's a common thing for student governments.
To communicate with each other.
Right, and to pass resolutions on statewide ordinances.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I guess going forward, and I know we have to let y'all go in just a minute or so. So the next step is the polling process. Do you know when about that will start?
I do not know offhand, but I would reckon it's soonish. I think next committee meeting, which is Tuesday, 5:15 in the Galaxy Room, we're going to be discussing wording for the resolution. I know I've been inviting members of the trans community to come out to that and help with crafting wording, which is what we did with the last resolution we passed against anti-LGBT bills in the legislature. So there's that, and then we have to put out a questionnaire. We kind of have to. Once we craft the resolution, then we can kind of make a questionnaire that's kind of based
around that. Is that distributed online, then, through email?
The poll?
Yeah.
Probably not. We need to ensure that it's UTD students taking the actual poll, so we'd have to more than likely go out and poll people individually. However, we can expect this to happen soon. Even though it's a lengthy process, student government's on top of this, and we're working as quickly as we can to make sure everything happens.
Okay. Do you all have any final wrap-up comments?
You think we pretty much covered everything, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think.
And if any listeners have any questions about the bill, is there an email they can direct to?
If you have anything, if you have just questions about, if you just have questions for the student government, sg@utdallas.edu. That's the student government email. I think it goes straight to the president.
Mm-hmm.
So I think she would be the person to direct concerns to. If you have questions about LGBT issues, rainbowguardutd@gmail.com. That's the LGBT advocacy group on campus. They'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
All right. Thank you guys so much for coming in. What are your names again?
Songar Ideas.
Adam Richards.
All right. Thank you. We're going to take a quick music break and then say goodbye. This is Sometimes You Just Drive by Michael Chapman off his new album, 50.
Trees call for sky turn red, fish in the river.
water's still rising, no sign of a storm, but the sun don't shine to keep us warm. I sent a prayer up to the Lord. On my reward. Some rivers run deep, some run wide, some run dark. There's secrets to hide. I send a prayer, a prayer of you alone. I'm still waiting, waiting on my reward. Don't let it rain, don't let it pour, don't let the wind blow through my door. I send a prayer, prayer up to the Lord. I'm still waiting, waiting on my lucky to be alive. Sometimes you live, but sometimes you just drive. I send a prayer up to the Lord. I'm still waiting, waiting on my reward. I'm still waiting, waiting on my reward. I'm still waiting, waiting on my
Thank you guys so much for listening to the Mercury Midday News. I think I've still been saying morning because force of habit, but you know what?
You said it twice, I think.
Oh, goodness gracious. Well, anyway, thank you so much for listening. Follow us on our new Twitter account. It's Merc, M-E-R-C, Midday News, spelled properly. We'll be posting about, you know, heads up for the guests for the show, topics, ways for you to call in, all that good stuff, retweeting some important news items from our home paper. But thank you guys so much for listening. I am Kara Santucci.
And I'm Nidhi Godke.
And it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for tuning in. And we will be back in exactly a week, so you won't be missing out. All right. See you.
The Mercury Midday News is produced by Kara Santucci and co-hosted by Nidhi Godke. The MMN is a converged product of The Mercury, the student-run newspaper at the University of Texas at Dallas and Radio UTD. Music credits Ben Sound and PurplePlanet.com.